Welcome, my friend, to the Peaceful Soul Podcast, conversations and meditations to help you live a more calm and peaceful life. I'm Alicia Lynn Diaz, Ayurvedic health practitioner, transformational healer, meditation mentor, and devotional singer. And I've created courses and programs that have supported thousands of people to transform their health, to awaken and awaken their greatest gifts, to heal their emotions and their mind, and to also unlock their spiritual purpose and live a more fulfilling life. And now I'm being called to share this wisdom, this ancient Ayurvedic wisdom, and the wisdom and experience that I've had across multidisciplinary healing aspects, and bring it all to you here in this podcast in a more open source format so it can serve you, reach more people, and really help us create the more peaceful, beautiful world that our hearts know is possible. I truly believe that a peaceful world begins with cultivating inner peace inside of each and every one of us, and together we can bring more harmony to the world at large. So please support this podcast by leaving a 5-star review and sharing. Please also hit that subscribe button and consider donating to support this podcast and the Peaceful World Movement at alicialyndiaz.com/donate. So in today's episode, I want to dive into this really beautiful topic. To me, this is the one of the most important practices we can cultivate in our lives, which is the power of prayer. And in this episode, I'm going to share with you my perspectives on prayer. I used to be someone who, I was not raised religious, so I felt like I didn't know how to pray. And I want to introduce you into a very open-hearted, accessible kind of relationship, your unique relationship with the divine, but through a prayer practice that is all your own, that you can cultivate your own relationship with the universe, with God, Goddess, beloved creator, source energy, whatever feels most true and aligned for you. I want to share with you some of my personal experiences with the power of prayer through some stories, and also guide you through a very, very easy and deeply transformational prayer practice that I've used in my times of deepest desperation, challenge, heartbreak, heartache, panic, anxiety, insomnia. I have turned to prayer when I couldn't find the answers to my own physical health ailments and pain, to just totally being in surrender around my dharma, my purpose, my relationships that were falling apart, various points in my life, very pivotal points in my life where prayer was the number one transformational tool that I could use that really changed things around. And also just as a regular gratitude practice, as a daily, you know, in the moments of that aren't just huge, tumultuous, pivotal moments, but just cultivating that relationship and help. It's really helped me to get in the flow and trust my own inner guidance on my path. So I have a lot in store for you with today's episode, including some guided practices. And let's play a little bit of music to set the tone, and we'll dive into today's topic, the power of prayer. as I shared with you in our opening, I felt like I didn't know how to pray. And so I didn't even discover this. I guess my upbringing, both of my parents were raised Roman Catholic and had found a lot of challenges and limitations of that for their personal lives. And so they were both what I would say like spiritual people. Like they weren't attending any kind of gathered religious services, but they were very kind people. They were always, you know, positive and encouraging and full of faith, like this trust that everything's working out and going to work out. But there was very, very little talk of anything spiritual in my household. And in fact, the only kind of, I guess, the only times that I was exposed to anything kind of formally religious or spiritual as a child was going to a few services that my grandparents kind of would go to for holidays. So I kind of associated prayer with these very formal, structured words and scriptures, you know, read by a priest that I had very little connection to. And I mostly was caught up in the ritual of not knowing like when I was supposed to sit, stand, or kneel, and if I was allowed to like eat the thing that they were giving at the front of the room when everyone goes up in a line. And like, I just totally didn't get it. I didn't like get the deeper meaning of it. And on the other hand, there were moments where I remember sitting in a church, like kind of like there was a couple there. I remember this beautiful cathedral in New York City that was just open that you could kind of just go into and pray or meditate. And I just remember feeling profound peace when I was alone in those settings, not kind of like in the rituals. So I guess I'm even realizing this just as I'm sharing this with you out loud right now in some of my like earlier beginnings. But basically when it comes to prayer itself, I guess I always had this connotation that prayer meant, you know, all of these elaborate formal rituals that are kind of disconnected and you have to be able to say the right thing in the right way or like something bad would happen. Can you relate to this at all? Maybe some form of this, right? And it's interesting because I've always just had an interest and a deep respect and reverence for all faiths. And like I said, there wasn't any specific talk, deliberate talk about anything spiritual or prayer. I've never once prayed with my family that I could remember. In fact, it was always an awkward thing when I was with a gathering of like friends and we were sitting down to eat and it was kind of like, can so-and-so say grace? And I'm like, oh, just please don't call on me because I don't know what to say. And I don't even pray myself. How can I pray in front of others? And so, yeah, it was always a kind of uncomfortable thing, to be honest. So it wasn't until I went to yoga school and I studied yoga, a teacher training at Integral Yoga Institute in the West Village of New York City when I used to live in New York. And I was born and raised on Long Island. And then I slowly started moving closer and closer and closer to the city. And then I worked in the city for a number of years, got super burned out on that. And that's when I moved west. So, but this little oasis in the West Village of Manhattan was the Integral Yoga Institute. And they had this beautiful 6 or 7 story ashram in the middle of Manhattan. And it was this sanctuary of peace. And in taking yoga classes there and learning from one of the swamis as I was studying my teacher training, one of the Swamis held a session for us one day, and I don't remember what he called it, but he was basically teaching us about how to have an altar at our own home and how to pray. And it was very, very beautiful and connected the way he shared about this. Because I, of course, with my upbringing, the only exposure that I had to an altar even was, you know, this huge shrine with massive statues of images that I didn't necessarily understand or feel connected to. So that was what I understood to be an altar. So here was this very humble, beautiful man who is a celibate monk in the integral yoga tradition of Swami Satchidananda. And he was suggesting that this was a very accessible practice and that anyone could use, that anyone could help cultivate their own inner peace and their unique connection with the divine. And so he walked us through a workshop that basically kind of asked us a bunch of questions and suggested, like, you just find a little corner in your home and maybe you have like a little piece of furniture or a little shelf or something, and you put items on it that make you feel connected to something greater than yourself. And so for me, I went home and I lived on the second story of a house that was renovated into an apartment. And so I had these alcove windows. And so I had these like this perfect little nook in my bedroom. And I put a little cabinet that I used for books that was kind of like not really needed for, it was just like extra storage. And I cleaned it out and I put it in that corner. And I went through and I was like, well, I really like collecting rocks and seashells. I lived very close to the beach on the south shore of Long Island. And so I had collected feathers and things like that. And so I started putting shells and feathers and rocks on my little shelf. And I was like, oh, that makes me feel connected to something greater than myself. And I would like look at the spirals on the shelves and shells and be like, wow, like, how did these even get created? And so it would bring me in like to reverence and awe. And then there were a few things that my grandmother, who had passed a couple years prior, who I was very, very close with and love her so much, there were some little things that she had left behind that were meaningful tokens. One was like a coin and a piece of her jewelry. And so I felt really connected to her and it in the spiritual realm. And so I put those on the altar. And so I just started kind of gathering, you know, things and realizing, wow, there's like more that I feel connected to something greater myself than I realized. And so, you know, eventually my altar collected little photographs of things that helped me feel peaceful and connected. And I, it kind of grew from there. So anyhow, as a side note, this is, you know, maybe I hope this is giving you some inspiration that this might be a practice that would support you with your prayer practice at home. As I've worked with consulting with some clients one-on-one, this has been a really great practice for them. And one of my clients had a walk-in closet in his bedroom, in his like master bedroom. And he had like an area, maybe an extra closet. I don't know exactly what it was because I've never been to the house, but he actually like cleared out the closet and made that his prayer room because he had a bunch of kids and it was like the quietest place that he knew he could just go to pray. And he put his things on one of the shelves and he had a chair in there and that was his meditation corner. Of course, I also put things like candles and incense. And that was one of the things that the Swami mentioned, was like things that like kind of invigorate your senses and make you feel really good. And I was like, oh, that's why, you know, you light incense or have, you know, a pretty candle or something. Like the light is representative of the light of truth or the life of spirit, the life of God. So it was I started having candles on there and a little bit of incense or like anointing oil because it smelled really good. And I would take a deep breath of this beautiful scent and I would feel more connected to my body and that type of thing. So, the power of prayer for me started with that as a ritual, because it sat in the corner of this alcove of my room, and the first thing I saw when I woke up in the morning was that. The last thing I saw before I went to bed was that. Every time I was in and out of my room, it was a visual representation of prayer and of connection to the divine, connection to something greater than myself, which brought me a sense of peace, and just it was always in my awareness because I could see it. And I remember one night during that year, I went through a really, really hard time. I went through a big breakup, and my partner had moved out while I was away for a weekend, a work weekend, presenting some research at a symposium. And I came home, and like all of his stuff was gone. And it was just a really, really hard time. So I had emotionally broken down on a lot of different levels. And my other grandmother had passed away all around the same time. And my inner heartache and stress had just stacked and mounted to the point where one night I found myself just collapsed in front of my altar because I just did not know what else to do. I also was starting to feel stagnant in my career at that time. I was having a lot of health challenges at that time. And I was just so distraught and stressed out. And I had so many unprocessed emotions that my first really powerful experience of prayer happened in a moment of deep surrender at that altar. And my second grandmother who had passed was a beautiful quilter, and so I had her quilt sitting next to the altar, and I just wrapped myself in that quilt and laid down in front of the altar. And I would not even call what I was doing at first prayer. It was kind of just collapse, like exhaustion. And I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And finally, I realized as I was sobbing and like trying to comfort myself that there was this moment of surrender. I just started talking out loud to the divine. I started talking out loud to God. I said, just please help me. I don't even know if I'm doing this right. I don't know what to say, what to do. I don't know what to think. I don't know what to feel. I know that I'm suffering. I know that I feel horrible. Like, I don't know what to do. Please just help. Help me. I don't want to live like this anymore. And that was essentially my prayer. And I don't remember exactly what I said in that moment, but these moments of surrender, you know, like we get to these moments of surrender where things stack for us and we in some ways have no choice but to just let go and let God. And it's so powerful when we can say that. And so I had some version of that in this moment where, you know, I said, I let go and I let God. And I fell asleep laying there in front of the altar. And in the upcoming months after that, in the 6 months after that, like everything in my life actually changed for the better. And I really look back at that moment and see that as a huge turning point. I got the clarity and the courage and the strength to pursue my dreams. So I was running a clinic at the time. And I always knew that my Dharma involved health and helping people heal and awaken to their potential in a way. I didn't have those words for it back then. But I knew that the way that I was doing it in the clinic in New York City was not the way that I was destined to do it. So I had a lot of stagnation there, and I had heartache and grief and pain and all kinds of things. So everything in my life changed for the positive direction after that. And that's what kind of prompted, I'll spare the story for another time, but that's what kind of prompted my move out west and essentially leading, like going to India and studying with the enlightened master healers, these world-renowned healers, and studying Ayurveda more deeply and all the things. So prayer has set me on the trajectory. Wow, I didn't even realize some of that as I turned on this podcast, some of the connections there. And it has continued to serve in such a deep and beautiful way. It is the process of surrendering your ego, what you think you want for yourself, whatever you are striving for, pushing for, you know, trying to figure out or gain in the outer world. And it instantly returns you to inner peace and connection to yourself, connection to your inner wisdom, and to that deep, quiet knowing that resides in your higher self. And so there's a couple other stories that I just want to share around prayer, but first there's this beautiful poem in the Vijnana Bhairava Tantra. The Vijnana Bhairava Tantra is a wisdom text, a Vedic wisdom text. And it essentially says, I'll sing it for you in Sanskrit and I'll give you the translation. Pujana mana pushpadya yamati kriyate drita nirvikalpe mahavyom nisa pujahi araralaya. Pujana mana pushpadya yamati kriyate drita nirvikalpe mahavyom nisa pujahi araralaya. Worship does not mean offering flowers. It means offering your heart to the vast mystery of the universe. It means letting your heart pulse with the life of the universe without thought and without reservation. It means being so in love that you are willing to dissolve and be recreated in every moment. Pujana mana pushpadya yamati kriyate drita nirvikalpe mahavyom nisa pujahi araralaya. Spiritual surrender is one of the most profound gifts you as a human can give to yourself. Dr. David Hawkins, the author of the incredible book Power Versus Force, including a series of other incredibly divine texts. In his book, Transcending the Levels of Consciousness, The Stairway to Enlightenment, he says, he offers us this simple two-step escape from the negativity of the ego. This is how you access the mechanism of truth, higher truth, your higher truth, the truth of your higher self. to transcend the limitations of the ego and cut through the complexity, it is only necessary to accept two ideas. And out of the many volumes of books he has written, these are two of the most powerful, potent things that he shares. One, negativity is based on an energetic force. Force is of animal origin that can be overcome only by power, which is solely of divine origin. Therefore, it is operationally necessary to request and invoke God's help by whatever means available. Doesn't that just give you the greatest permission for prayer possible? You can't do prayer wrong. Any words that you use to invoke the help and the support of divine guidance, especially when you say them out loud with humility and surrender, with genuine listening and an open heart and an open mind. Request and invoke the divine's help by whatever means available. Ha! Huh, what permission! Number two, disidentify with the body, emotions, and mind as, quote-unquote, me. Be truthful and admit that they are yours, but not you. While this may seem artificial, strange, foreign, and unnatural in the beginning, the basic reality is that it is a truth of higher order, which makes it a very powerful and formidable tool. The mind will try to deny this reality as well as truth. That's what the mind is supposed to do, because truth is intuited as its nemesis. So when we are in the ego, in the mind, in the lower self will try to fight this spiritual surrender, this prayer, this higher truth, because it is seen as its nemesis. It's the death of the ego, and the ego will fight till the very death. But when you can just let go, totally surrender, and use your words in such a way with an open heart and a humble spirit, it softens and transforms your experience. I've done this prayer for my body. I've done this process of prayer for my body, for my emotions when I'm going through turmoil. Kneel down at my altar, or anywhere for that matter, and or even stand, like it really doesn't matter, but kind of that metaphorical when you're brought to your knees. And dear God, I don't know what to do. I give this suffering back. This pain that I'm feeling, I give it up to you. I no longer choose to hold it. I will no longer hold it. I am unable to hold it. I give it back to you. Wow, what a simple, powerful prayer, just that. These emotions are not mine. I feel so angry right now, but I know this anger is not mine. As much as your ego gets a payoff, it's like it strokes the ego to feel the anger and to feed it. But if you can even so much as squeak out the consciousness in your words to say, I want to give this back because I don't want this to poison me. I offer this anger up. Wow. And it's fine to feel it, to release it, to hit the pillow, to scream it out. But to use and to transmute that energy into your conviction of what you choose. So while there is no right, wrong way to quote unquote pray, one of the things that I find really helpful in my languaging is to language things around an invitation, and a choosing. So there's one song prayer that I sing that is, may I. So when I notice myself being really self-deprecating, negative, feeling bad about myself, having negative self-talk, I remember this song, which is just, may I be kind to me. May I see what love sees. Wow, if we could just see ourselves through the eyes of love, if every person on this planet could just see themselves through the eyes of love, they would automatically see others through the eyes of love. They would raise their children through the eyes of love. They would give people the benefit of the doubt instead of thinking that taking something personally and thinking it's about us. Wow, if only we could see what love sees. What a powerful prayer. May I be kind to me. May I see what love sees. And then the second part. May I be kind to you. May I speak only what's true. May I be kind to me. May I see what love sees. May I be kind to you. May I speak only what's true. May I speak only what's true. What a simple prayer to return ourselves to love. I've had to sing that one to myself. Sometimes I imagine, this is another strategy for you, is imagining that the divine parent, mother, father, inside of you is holding the inner child that is also you, singing to him or her inside of your own experience. So I highly encourage that type of prayer, seeing what love sees, using the terms may I, because in that moment, I could not do an affirmation that says, I am love. No, I don't feel love right now, but I can invite myself to feel love. May I just be kind to me? May I see what love sees? And may that ripple forward into my interactions with others. May I be kind to you? May I speak only what's true? That one can come up a lot in intimate relationships, right? Where we lash out, take out something on our partner who's pissing us off, making us angry, frustrating us, doing something jerky or mean, and then only to realize, like, I don't want to reinforce frustration in my relationship. So am I going to lash out and speak what's untrue? No, I want to reinforce and speak what's true to my partner. I want to bring out the best in them, because when I bring out the best in them, they bring out the best in me, and everything's an upward spiral, not a self-deprecating downward spiral. So may I be kind to me. May I see what love sees. The other thing I mentioned is sometimes using the language of choosing. I choose wholeness. Okay, God, I don't know why I'm experiencing the intense suffering that I'm feeling right now, the pain that I'm feeling right now. I'm in so much turmoil. I'm afraid of what's going to happen to the world. I'm afraid of my loved ones getting sick and dying. I'm afraid of me dying. I'm afraid of being a failure, I'm afraid of all the things. But those emotions and thought forms are not me. I know they're not me. I choose wholeness. I choose my truth. I choose the light. I call on the light within. I call on the light within. I call on the light within. I think that's a series of prayers that I've used often. When I get so tired of being tired, or so tired of my own self-deprecating inner talk, and you use that frustration instead of succumbing into a total victim embodiment, you can choose to embody your choice to invoke the light within, to say, I'm going to utilize this power. I'm going to utilize this feeling, the essence, the raw frustration with my situation. I'm going to harness it into power, into my sacred power of sovereignty, of choosing, of wholeness. And I'm going to invoke what I want. So if you even so much as just make a list of things that are challenging you and frustrating you, you can invoke what you want as the opposite of that. I choose wholeness. I choose to experience my emotions without identifying with them. I choose to witness my thoughts without believing what the thoughts are saying. I choose to live my true path. I choose to trust. I choose to be guided by faith. I choose to listen to the whisper of my soul, of my inner voice. I choose. I choose. I am simply at choice. I choose the meaning that I make around all of my life situations. Whew. Yeah, so I hope that those methods are helpful for you. I hope you have your journal nearby and you're taking some notes. Yeah. Now let's go a little bit deeper into prayer. So for me, Sanskrit prayers are, as I've continue to deepen my romance with the Sanskrit language, I realize more and more that, of course, singing it in English and invocation or speaking what I choose is very powerful and has its place. But when I want to really rewire my subconscious mind and embody grace in know the faith and the devotion and the light in my bones, in my cells, in my body. If I want to kiss the cosmic stardust that has created all of existence, if I want to dance in the realm of multidimensional aliveness, that's when I sing Sanskrit, because it helps me transcend into this beautiful effervescent fabric of creation that is just so yummy and juicy and enlivening and rejuvenating. And so to me, that's where mantra meditation comes in. That's where these kind of priestess practices of Vedic fire ceremony and Agnihotra and Sanskrit chanting and mantra meditation and kind of this devotional ceremonial practices come into play. And so I want to share with you a couple really powerful stories about some of my experience with these, what I like to call Vedic priestess practices, that I've spontaneously gone into and also studied and learned. And but when grace moves through a body, a soul, into another body and soul, and we are united as one, and we uplevel and heal the collective as a result energetically, that's to me kind of the next level of evolution, of healing and of healers, and in being able to drop into that deep of an essence and a practice. And so, whew. Okay. I shared a few episodes ago my first mystical experience, so I guess it's not too far off to share with you some practices around the miraculous power of prayer, and when it comes to some of these Vedic priestess practices of Agnihotra and fire ceremony. So if you haven't heard that story yet, I do encourage you to go back and listen to that episode. But after that big spiritual awakening experience that I had in the following 6 months, I mentioned that I kind of went into the spontaneous channeling mode for a number of months. And so I started leading these ceremonies that I had learned. In fact, the ceremonies started before the big spiritual awakening experience. As I think back now, perhaps they even led to that awakening experience, but probably 4 to 6 months prior. Yeah, 4 to 6 months prior to that big spiritual awakening, mystical experience that I had the intuition that it was now time for me to practice Agnihotra. And Agnihotra is a Vedic fire ceremony that is performed. It's a very simple ceremony that anyone could learn. I would love to teach you. I'm doing some trainings on it. So if you're interested, email me, hello@alishalindiaz.com. And during the fire ceremony, I had this intuition that even though I learned Vedic fire ceremony when I was in Ayurveda school from Dr. Ladd and from some of the other teachers there. We practiced it together as a class, as students, but I never purchased my own kit. It's a copper pyramid and a bunch of copper-based items that are mathematically precise. And I didn't take on that practice myself. And then spontaneously, I had this intuition that it felt very urgent and important that I order the Agnihotra equipment so that I can start doing my own fire ceremonies. And I got the equipment in the mail, and as it had just arrived, a friend of mine was going to be going off to travel and needed a dog sitter for her dog. And she felt terrible because she's like, oh my gosh, my dog, who's like her child, my dog has this golf ball sized tumor on the side of his leg. And I'm so scared, but I have these travel plans and like, I don't know what to do. And she's going to be away for 10 days. She said, so I set a vet appointment for when I get back, a follow-up, a biopsy of it. And she was going to drop the dog off to me before she left. And I said, don't worry, like, it felt really right. I was like, I'll take care of him. But I instantly knew when she called me crying that her dog was the reason I had felt an urgent intuition to get the Agnihotra supplies. So anyhow, she dropped the dog off to me and cried. And I was like, don't worry, he's in good hands, you know, and sent her lots of love. And she left. And the dog was a rescue, and he was very skittish, but he's super sweet. And he had hanging off his hind leg this golf ball sized tumor with no hair on it. It was like bald, it was unsightly, and it had like the size, it had like a marble kind of off the top of it. So it was like this double clumpy thing hanging, and it was causing him to limp a little bit. And so I had him for those 10 days, and I did not change a thing. She was very meticulous about his diet and stuff, so I did not change a thing about his diet or his water. I gave him no supplements. I changed nothing in his daily routine. I still brought him to the park and played frisbee and stuff. But every evening, there was a few mornings and evenings, sunrise and sunset, that I did the Agnihotra practice. And it is said that this Agnihotra fire ceremony prayer practice, it only takes about 15 or 20 minutes a day. But it is the effects of the energy go out like 11 miles radius. At least 11 miles is what they've been able to measure scientifically. And I think in the ancient texts, it even says that it goes further than that. But this copper pyramid, it's an inverse copper pyramid, and it creates this sacred geometry energy vortex that is very, very potent right in the center. And you offer these very specific prayers that are simple, but they're very potent. And you offer the prayers in right at the moment, the junction of sunrise or sunset. You have a specific timer that kind of guides you to the exact second. And there's also variations of the ceremony where you do longer prayers before and or after that just support, you know, the whole prayer process. But it magnifies and amplifies, and it is so powerful, and it's so calming and soothing, and I just love doing it. And women aren't supposed to practice it when you're on your menstrual cycle because you want all the energy to go downward. So I had only gotten to practice it because I had my cycle when I was watching the dog. So I only got to practice it really just a handful of times. But the ash that results from the fire ceremony is medicinal. And you can make it into salves, and you can make it if you do it correctly, you can even ingest it in small amounts, like a not quite homeopathic, but right, like a tiny little pinch there. It's ingestible. And I would put like a pinch in my smoothies or in my tea. I would make salves, or you can just literally use the ash as a medicinal healing compound. There's a lot of different things that you can make medicines with it, or add it into your medicines, herbal medicines, to potentize it. So for Jackson, the doggy, I just every night took a little bit of pinch of the ash and sprinkled it over the tumor and just sang some Ayurvedic prayers and petted him and kind of tucked him into bed, so to speak. And I also just used a soothing voice and told him, because he was a rescue dog and he had some trauma, so I just told him that he was calm and safe and a happy, healthy doggy and things like that. And I did the ash and the chants on the thing itself, on the tumor itself, and then I just kind of petted his whole nervous system and helped him calm and sleep. And so 10 days of the prayers, maybe three to five days of the Agnihotra practice, which he was never even present for. He was usually in the house and I was doing it in the backyard. And 10 days later, when she came home, the tumor had, the golf ball was gone. All the hair had grown back. And there was a palpable half marble little lump underneath his fur, under the skin. And she was blown away. And so was I. And I think it happened so gradually. There's a part of me that thinks back to that time that I should have taken a photo of it. However, I knew that I just needed to be in this like humble service. Like there was no reason to document anything because I wasn't expecting anything and I wasn't trying to do anything. I just was loving the dog and doing the ceremony in my own devotional practice and trying to support him. But it seems that there was some kind of act of grace that supported him during that time. She also said in the number of days following that he had never been so calm and unexcitable to outside stimuli, because he usually would like really freak out, and that she was just so she, when she came over to pick him up, we sat on the living room floor and she was kind of just crying. She's like, what'd you do to my dog? He's never seemed so relaxed. And it was really beautiful. It was a really bonding experience for her and I. And I don't assume any type of cause and effect relationship. I think that it would be, I think it would be not necessarily, it doesn't feel true for me to say like, hey, that fire ceremony did this thing to that dog. No, I'm sharing with you some effects and beautiful experiences that I've had with the power of prayer. I don't know if it was the fire ceremony. I don't know if it was the ash. I don't know if it was just me petting him and chanting over him and helping his nervous system calm down that allowed his body to come into balance and alignment. I don't claim to have any, be any part of the quote unquote cause or effect relationship. And by the way, just to wrap up the story about the doggy, is she did take him to his vet appointment, and it was, they basically removed the little half marble, but it was a very, very easy procedure where before it was kind of like all in the muscle, and it, to remove it could have really damaged his leg. And so, and he would have had many days of recovery or weeks of recovery or something like that. He would have had a lot of recovery. So the fact that it had reduced so much, and they took that little last little half marble size from under the hair that had even grown back, was, just such a beautiful thing. And he recovered immediately from it. So he's still to this day a healthy, happy doggy, as far as I'm aware. And I guess this was like probably 8 years ago. So anyhow, maybe 6 or 7. I don't know. I'm not that great with timelines. Anyway, something in that realm. But I share this with you because it was an awe-inspiring, powerful experience for me to have, for me to be introduced to this fire ceremony, which is like the amplification of prayer in a very potent way. It also just like potentizes your presence. And whenever our energy is meditative and really focused, it creates a field of coherence around us, like heart math is now proving scientifically. But it creates this field of coherence around us, and everything in a field of coherence comes into order, into divine order, into health and wholeness. And so, you know, it's not about the external healing, but it's about the inner experience and communing with that peace and that devotion and the divine as often as possible. Create coherence in your field, create to disidentify with the thoughts and the emotions that create so much of human suffering, and to just enter back into that relationship with self. And so I could tell you so many other stories of leading up to my big spiritual awakening mystical experience, followed by the channeling and the retreats and the one-on-one healing ceremonies that I did with people that were incredibly transformational. And they did a lot of ancestral healing. You can do a lot of ancestral healing through prayer as well, which is, again, just some of the things that we struggle with, the imprints of our ancestors, of our parents, of society, of our health, of our genetics, of our epigenetics. So much can be supported and rewired by your deliberate choosing, by spiritual surrender, of letting go through the processes that I've outlined and shared in this episode so far. And if nothing else, it is just a beautiful practice to support your nervous system and to support the health and the wholeness of your being. So if this is something you feel drawn to, I super welcome your feedback. If you have any powerful prayer stories, I would love to hear about them. If you're on listening to this podcast on anchor.fm/peacefulsoul, there's a button that you can press to leave me a voice memo, or you can email me at hello@alicialindiaz.com. And I would love to hear about your prayer experience. I have so many stories. I'll probably do multiple episodes on this topic. Because I think it's important that we share these with each other, that we remember the power of prayer. You know, one of my best friends recently just told me a story that her friend and client, that her dad was in the hospital with COVID, and that he was a very spiritual and religious man, and he was in his 70s and he had MS, and multiple factors that were kind of working against him. He was immune compromised, and he went in and he had to get intubated, and he was very, very ill. And 140 people gathered on his behalf on Zoom, and they did a rosary, like a Catholic rosary prayer service for him. And he miraculously healed. And she sent me a video of all the nurses and doctors lining up in the hallway with signs and confetti and like hearts drawn, and him being wheeled out of the ICU with his hands in the air like he's celebrating, and everyone just applauding him with so much gratitude, and as they wheeled him into a regular hospital bed. And he had beaten COVID even in his elderly years with, you know, advanced stages of MS in a wheelchair, that kind of thing. So, you know, she even said to me, she's like, haven't prayed that much in my entire life. Like, I've never been really connected to prayer, she said. But after that experience, if someone would have asked me if that moved the needle for him or made a difference, she would say, absolutely. She's like, I never felt such a powerful experience, like, around, all geared towards, like, healing and healing, like, one person. And so I have so many stories that I want to share with you that are so inspiring. And I want to share more of these stories just to reinvigorate hope and to remember that even when it seems like we have nothing else that we can do, we always can choose to come back to prayer and to be in a state of grace and gratitude. And yeah, what a beautiful place to be. So I'm going to wrap up today with one of my favorite Sanskrit prayers. I'm going to sing this prayer called, well, it essentially translates to mean, lead me, like, may I be led from unreal to real. May I be led from the darkness to the light. May I be led from fear into faith. And may all beings be free. Om Shanti, peace. So I'll wrap up as I sing that and leave off with some more beautiful music. And I'm sending you so much love today. Thank you for joining. Let's dive into our closing prayer practice. If you'd like, you can come to a comfortable seat or lie down and take 3 deep breaths. And we'll open with an om, so you can chant om with me. 1 more deep breath in and let it out. Full deep breath in and exhale with om. Om Asato Ma Sat Kamaya Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya Mrityormamritam Gamaya. Om Asatoma Satgamaya Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya Mrityormamritam Gamaya. Om Asatoma Satgamaya Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya Mrityormamritam Gamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope that today's message and guided practice nourished your soul and helped you feel more calm and at peace within. Please consider supporting this podcast by leaving a 5-star review and sharing it. Please also hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on the amazing conversations and meditations to come. And remember, peaceful souls create a peaceful world. Please also consider donating to support this podcast and join me in the Peaceful World Movement at alishalindiaz.com/donate. I give away special gifts and courses to my donors. Thank you so much for being here, sending you lots and lots of love, and I will see you on the next episode. Om Shanti. Peace. music provided by DJ Taz Rashid. You can support his music and visit him at djtazrashid.com. Details in the show notes. Love and blessings again. Om Shanti. Thank you so much. I will see you on the next episode.